listening to The Bob Dean Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy 12 noon here, Pacific Standard Time on the California coast, and to all of our friends in the East and South and Midwest and across the oceans blue. This is Bob Dean from my palatial Santa Monica virtual background apartment. And welcome to the Bob Dean Show. Yay. Today, guys, we're just going to do a little shooting the shit stuff. First of all, I want to say thank you guys for being so patient with my bumbling on the phone call-ins with Kathy St. George. Miss St. George may very well be coming back more frequently as a co-host again, like we did in the studio in L.A., because I just miss her and she's fun. And today, ladies and gentlemen, I have my good friend Clark Trainer of Agora Hills, California. Yay. Thank you, Clark, for joining us, Clark.
My hands are not in focus.
I know. So stop doing that.
This is like I'm in the Matrix.
So, ladies and gentlemen, Clark Trainer and I and his lovely wife, Dickie, we have been friends since 1988. I calculated it.
Wow.
So that's 35 years now?
Damn. That's like 6 good months. 35 years, but 6 good months.
When we were young and, well, you still look good, but when I was young and thin and tan, we all met in Miami. And Clark is a native of Fort Lauderdale. His lovely wife was a student at FIU. You guys met at FIU, right?
Yes, we met at FIU.
And
I picked her up in the library. Actually, she picked me up in the library. I was minding my own business.
You, please. Clark couldn't be any more of a loudmouth California surfer boy, blonde hair, blue-eyed kind of guy. And his lovely wife is an Asian, gorgeous woman from Nepal. And she's very quiet. She's very smart, and she's got a quick wit. But she's very reserved because she can't wait to see what's going to come out of your mouth first. Clark, you muted yourself. You muted yourself.
Oh, okay.
Just a little bit of the technical difficulties that we run across on our end, not on my producer's end from time
to time. Oh, no, that wasn't technical at all. That was just pure stupidity on my part.
Yeah, I know. And now you're on the bottom, Clark, whether you like it or not. You don't have the same little thing that I do up here. Sam typed me a little message that says on the bottom, referring to your putting the sound back on. But the reference to on the bottom, it was just a bad sexual.
Oh, he's telling me where the controls are.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. But anyway,
I thought he was trying to pick me up.
No. Okay. Clark and I go back a long way with his lovely wife. We worked together at Mark's Place, which was at the time was one of the top 10 restaurants in the country, as so voted by Food and Wine.
Yes.
And Clark and I became fast friends because we were fun. The rest of the people that worked there were pretty much assholes. Maybe there were a couple that were okay. Well, I mean, I know you're still in contact with a couple of them. Well, not Eric. Eric Rogel, he was first. You know, Eric's aces, too.
Eric Rogel.
The little cool. And Chef Mark, you know, he, whatever. And but it was a fun spot. We made a buttload of money for way back then. I came across an old menu. The menu changed daily, and this was a high-end place. It was like the Miami Elite dined there every night.
Yeah.
And they used to have a Rolls Royce parking contest in the front for the ladies who lunched.
Yeah. Remember that? Yeah. Because we were right off Bell Harbor.
We were
off Bell Harbor. So we had anybody who was anybody in Miami, from sports stars to corporate raiders. What was the name of that one corporate raider guy who made all of his money going in, buying undervalued companies and then splitting them up? Basically what like the Richard Gere character
I did in Pretty Woman, which I just watched the other night.
In that movie. What was his name? And he'd come in for lunch and he would take one sip of his coffee cup and then he would make you refill, bring him a new coffee cup because it got cold.
I don't know. Was it Victor Posner?
Yes, it was. I think it was.
Yeah, it was Victor Pazdar. He was like, and his daughter was such a bitch. And I don't care if she's listening. Oh. I'm only speaking for me. But she was. She was the same way. You know, she was probably, we were what in our, I've got what, 5 or 6 years on you. So you were like 22. I was probably 25 or 6. Yeah. So she was probably in her mid 30s. Remember that redhead? And she was so condescending to the help. Now we realize, ladies and gentlemen, that we're the help. Okay. That's what we're there to do. We're there to do a job. We're there to be courteous and efficient in hopes that we will receive a gratuity. You know, we don't want to be, you know, we form relationships with good customers and, you know, we become lifelong friends with them. But others, especially, you know, people, not all, but a lot of people that have, it's usually new money too. Old money will be really friendly to you.
Yes.
Just because they're courteous.
Yes.
But new money are the ones that act like bitches. But this Gail Pazdar, I will never forget the time I was filling her champagne and like two bubbles went over the top. And before I could even suggest changing the glass or drying it with our little thing, she was like, I'll never forget the look. And she's like, what about the glass? Change the glass. I mean, like that. And I was like, calm down, girl. So I did one day after I did no longer work there after my unfortunate termination, which is where I made the first scene after getting fired from a job. I ran into her. She was behind me at Epicure over on South Beach. And Epicure is like, you know, the market. And I turned right around and she was staring at me with that same possum look on her face. And I was like, you were just so mean. I looked right at her and go, why are you so mean? I was probably buying vodka. Or I think it was.
I remember that place too. My God, that's a name from the past. Not only her name, but the name of Epicure.
Epicure, yeah, that was.
That was the place back when South Beach was just coming back.
And we experienced that, and that's something that I like to talk about because Miami Beach has always been fascinated. And what I want to do is also I've made some notes. I want to talk about.
Came back because of us. Let's just get that out there. We were the reason Miami Beach came back.
It is. You and I and Dickie and about 200 other people that moved over there. Ladies and gentlemen, you have to remember one thing. Oh, by the way, please feel free to call in to the Bob Dean Show if you'd like to have anything to say. 323-203-0815.
Unless you have a child that looks like me, don't call in if you have a child that looks like me.
It's like a quagmire thing. Did you ever see that on Family Guy where all these kids look just like quagmire?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I did 23andMe for the fun of it. You know, I did the health and the genetics just to see where I was from because, you know, Americans think that they know where they're from, but they really don't. If you're like fifth, sixth, seventh generation. And so every Friday they send you an email saying, oh, we found new relatives. And there's always a very tense moment in the house before I open up that link to see exactly who those new relatives are.
Well, what is your, because my background was spot on from what my parents told me, you know, a quarter Scot, quarter Irish and, 30% Serbian. So it was spot on, but what is yours? Are you Swedish?
Well,
So
we always thought we were half German and half Irish, and it turns out we're pretty much 99% Irish. So there's no German in us. We're about as Irish as can be. And
you hardly drink at all. That surprises me. You hardly drink at all.
I know.
Was that racist?
And then like 1%, I'm 1% Viking. Now, this is interesting. I don't know if you know this. A couple months ago, we went to London for the 70th anniversary of the summit of Mount Everest.
Yes, which is a whole topic I want to get into. Let's make sure we have time. I want to hear all about it, but go ahead.
At the tail end of that, we went over to Ireland. It was my first time in Ireland. And my whole life, I always wanted to go back there, especially now that I know I'm 99% Irish. And I always wondered about that 1% Viking. And when I was in Ireland, we did a city tour, and I never knew this, but apparently the island of Ireland was controlled by the Vikings for several hundred years.
No kidding.
Yeah, it was back before the Irish had any sort of, the Irish, the native Irish, the Celtics and everything, had any form of real government. And it was very cottage and hamlet controlled. It wasn't some sort of national defense system. And so it was a great launching point. And if you look at it, being the Vikings where they went, of course they went to Ireland. That's a great island to launch from, to go up to Iceland and Greenland and wherever else they were headed. So then I'm like, okay, well, that explains the 1% Viking. Well, now, of course, when I'm trying to look sexy to Dickie, I point out, you know, I'm 1% marauding Viking.
Uh-huh. So, and do you have one of those hats with the horns on it?
Yes, I'm usually very horny.
You are. I'm sure that with some little thong thing is really going to turn your wife on.
Yeah.
I can see, ladies and gentlemen, you have to meet his wife. She is the most wonderful, wonderful gal, girl, what a lady, woman. I don't know what preferred pronoun any of it, but she's just the coolest. And she has this look on her face all because Clark is, you're a great guy. And I love you. I love you like a brother. But things that come out of your mouth sometimes are hilarious. And his wife, ladies and gentlemen, will just look at me like, and just roll her eyes, one quick roll, and then a little head shake like this. She does that about 100 times a day. But anyway, that's cool that you're part Viking.
Yeah, I know. You didn't, so if you're Irish, you didn't have any like unknown Northern European or anything in your profile?
Well, I was a 23andMe. It was several years ago when I did it. And I've always meant to start doing the family tree thing.
Yeah.
Because my father's, I know quite a bit about my mom's side from Yugoslavia. My grandparents immigrated as small children. And my dad, his side, but my dad was real tight-lipped about his side of the family. And he was, it's a long story on that. But after mom and dad passed away, I went on this pilgrimage and I went back to where they're both from in Western Pennsylvania, close to where your folks are from, yeah, West Virginia. Because my dad was from Uniontown. My mom was from Brownsville area. And in Uniontown, because I really want to go back, my aunt Virginia, who was the matriarch of the family, she and my Uncle Jim lived in this gorgeous Victorian house that my Uncle Jim's parents built in like 1919 or something. And Jim and Virginia met, they went to high school together, they graduated in 1933, but they didn't fall in love and marry until the late 60s. So they didn't have any children, and they lived in this house. And I, as a child, I don't remember it, but when I went back on this pilgrimage, man, it was like stepping back into a museum. Mm-hmm. Literally, the Victrola and the furniture and his toys from childhood. And the bathroom was one, it was like as big as your living room, and with one giant clawfoot tub on a landing in the middle of the room. It was just the most coolest house. But the point of all this being is that my Aunt Virginia, my father didn't get along very well with his father. That's why he didn't do a lot of talking. And my dad was an only child. He had a stepbrother and a stepsister. But she took me to a dean. I had no idea it existed. There's a non-perpetual care cemetery, a small cemetery in the middle of Uniontown, where the Dean family goes back pre-Civil War. And there must be 50 graves. And she was pointing out that these people that were like generals in the Civil War, and you know, my name is Robert Densmore Dean II. My father's Robert Densmore Dean. All right, there's a Robert Densmore Dean that passed away at the age of like 6 from cholera or something in like 1912. It was just fascinating, and I've always wanted to go back and do some more lineage on that. But it's just, you know, we have no idea how, you know, life is so short, and then you have 3 boys. Calden, Jan Denzing, who are such handsome young men because they're a mix of you and your beautiful wife. And so, hello, there I am. So tell us about your son.
3 boys. The oldest is an actor. The middle one is a social media influencer of sorts. And then the youngest is a swimmer who, you know, like every youngest son pushes the limits in the fun ways. You know,
he's younger, so he gets away with more crap, right?
Yeah, he does. So did I. I was the last of six. So I was the spare parts. They thought they'd throw one more together. Because, so my parents had six kids in 7 years. So everyone's a year apart. My dad always said that we'd be closer in age, but they could only afford a semi-private room at the hospital after birth. but everyone's 1 year apart except for me. And then there's 2 years between my brother and I. So I always figured either I wasn't planned or I was just, you know, the spare parts and immaculate conception.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's why you're so special. I'm the youngest of four. And, you know, we just got away with more crap anyway.
Yeah, we did. Yeah,
how are you folks?
And now that I have three kids, I think in part it's like, you know, the oldest one, you sterilize everything and everything's like got to be perfect and you do the diet. By the third one, you're just so freaking exhausted. You're like, here, let's go to McDonald's.
Exactly. I remember a television commercial that I used to, it was for Huggies or something, where the woman, there's like two women and the one woman has, there's a newborn and the 12-year-old girl's like, can I hold her? And the birth mother's like, oh, you know, did you wash your hands? And then in the next scene, when she has two kids, she's in the car repair shop and the guy's all greasy. And she goes, here, hold him, while she's looking for her checkbook.
Yeah, that's about it.
Well, I don't know. I've never had the privilege of being a parent. But, how I worry about my cat if he doesn't come home at night. I don't know how you guys do it once a kid gets a driver's license. I don't know how my folks did it. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's the thing is, you know, there's that cliche that you're always a parent, and it really is true. Like, I've got, you know, my oldest is at college now, you know, Tenzing is at college, and I have to admit, every once in a while, I find my phone, and I track him just to see, you know, like 2 a.m, I'm like, I wonder where he is. Is he okay? Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't end, and he's 22.
Well, he's living in Long Beach now, right?
Yeah, he's down in Long Beach, going to school.
I was thinking about going down to Long Beach today. I think it's a little too late in the day because Nikki, you remember Nikki, beautiful African-American friend, she and her sister both moved down there. And then Nicole, of course, you know, remember Nicole? Nicole's been in Long Beach for several years, and she owns a home down there. And so, it's, you know, it's La Opera is our go-to spot. Next time you go down La Opera, our friend Terry owns La Opera. It's a gorgeous Italian place. It's downtown. It's been there for 30 or 40 years.
Well, it's on Pine? Is it on Pine? Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's a great spot. Great food, great happy hour and that sort of thing. So we need to meet that. We should all go down sometime.
All right. I wrote down the name. I like Long Beach. The thing about Long Beach is it's hit or miss. There's some areas that haven't really come back yet, but there's some areas down there that are really cool and some very interesting places. You know what's also gotten really interesting is San Pedro.
San Pedro is fascinating, and I love San Pedro.
It's got so much history because of its proximity to the port, and
it's like still a tight fishing village community, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And a lot of artists have moved in there now. And what's great about artists is not only are they poor, so they can't just knock it down and build some McMansion, they take what's already there, but they find really great ways of restoring it.
Of course. So
a lot of the old architecture hasn't been knocked down in San Pedro. Well, San Pedro is becoming a really interesting place.
Of course. And that's how it starts. It starts with artists and gay people who move into these fabulous structures. And that's where the gentrification came from.
Immaculate lawns.
That's what was happening on South Beach when we ourselves moved over there. Because, you know, after, and this is a huge part of American history that blows me away, that, like, so many people have no reference to at all, which is the Mariel Boatlift. And, you know, when I'm discussing this with people, because people are like, oh, tell, I'm like, I tell people I was a bartender in Miami in the 80s, and the movie Scarface was entirely accurate. And, you know, we didn't go to South. When I first moved there, I was 22, and I was living in North Miami Beach on 135th and Biscayne, mm-hmm. down by FIU on the, I had that really awesome apartment right on the water.
Yeah.
And, but I remember my friends telling me that when I worked at Raffles, don't go to South Beach. You'll get your throat slit, you know?
Right.
And it was true because of like, because I watched this documentary about Miami Beach, and it was fascinating because after the hurricane of 1925 that blew just about everything down, then the architects came in with the deco where they couldn't go over three stories up to like 16th and Ocean. And but then when the Jewish people that moved down, that was what the documentary was about. And I mean, all I remember is old Jewish people like in Wolfies and things like that going, oh, oy vey, free pickles, take them with you. But it was such a marvelous culture of Jewish people that retired down there and how they were so intertwined with socializing, whether it be playing canasta on the beach or their dances or their restaurants and that sort of thing. And then as they started, their generations started to pass through. And then the Marielitas came over after Castro emptied his prisons and asylums. And that's when South Beach got so bad. Then in what was it like in the mid 80s is when we all started going, you know, there are just too many beautiful places to live over there for $300 a month, you know?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of when the first place. Yeah. I mean, that was crazy about South Beach, right? Because like you see in Scarface, it was old people, crack den, like horrible, then old people, you know, building by building.
Right.
And it was just this mix. And then I think the Strand opened.
The Strand was the first place.
On Collins, like around 6th.
No, Washington.
On Washington, around 7th and Washington. And because that architecture was just so beautiful. And right. They lit it up and they decorated it in all the right ways. And when did the Strand open? 86, 87?
It was like 86 or 87. And then yeah. Lulu's came next. Lulu's was one of the premier restaurants.
Yeah.
And then because Lasso Lounge, there was the Lasso Lounge, the bar that I ran, which was the coolest haunted bar on the beach. And, you know, and everybody hung out there.
That place was fun.
But the Strand is where my dear friend, where Cheryl Cook invented the Cosmopolitan, the most infamous cocktail. Yep, Cheryl Cook invented that. They have a Cheryl Cook. I'm the third person in the world, ladies and gentlemen, to ever have a Cosmopolitan.
I did not know it was invented at the
Strand. Yes, and it's documented. And how the story goes, because Cheryl's going to come on. We're trying to coordinate it when she can be on one day, because she's just a gas. But she was a bartender there. Christina Solaproto, who everybody in Miami knows as Crispy, who's a Miami native, was sitting at the bar one day when Cheryl was trying, you know, was whipping up things. It was early, and they were, you know, Cheryl made up this drink. Well, I'll try this. And they both liked it. And Cheryl goes, well, what should we call it? And at that same moment, the hostess, because, you know, South Beach was so full of models, the hostess at the front door had just gotten her first cover on Cosmopolitan. So everybody that came through the door, the girl's holding up the big magazine going, look, I'm on Cosmo. Look, I did Cosmo. So Cheryl goes, let's call it a Cosmo. So Crispy, who is now the concierge or director of customer happiness for the Standard Hotel on the beach, Crispy toddles over to my bar and puts her feet up on the bar and goes, hey, Cheryl just invented this drink. I mixed it up, tasted it. It's like, it's really good. And then it swept the beach. And the two women, I think, that wrote Sex and the City were regulars at Cheryl's bar. And they saw how the drink, everybody was drinking it and incorporated it into the show. That's my theory, but I know that those two women were. Wow. Yeah, so that's a pretty cool
I didn't know the backstory of the Cosmopolitan.
Well, because
I didn't know it was a Miami Beach invention.
Yeah, by Cheryl Cook. And they have Cheryl Cook Day once a year where they have a little parade and everything. And she still tends bars. She's great, Cheryl. Hi, Cheryl Cook. Hi, Crispy.
When's the last time you've been back to South Beach?
Dude, I've been back since 95.
You won't recognize it now.
You know, that's just why I don't want to go. It's just like why I'll never go back to Nashville.
Yeah, I know, you know, eventually, you know, it was great the way it was gentrifying, because it was gentrifying in the existing buildings, and it was quaint and sexy and everything, but then eventually the big money found it, and the big money found it
and ruined it,
and went in and built these huge resort things and down past the fence
and everything. Well, is that, remember, it all started with that German guy, Thomas Kramer.
Yep.
And remember how he
bought up all the property.
And what he would do is, like that one, I don't remember the name of the hotel, but it was one of the few structures that withstood the hurricane of 1925. It was a two-story hotel. And he remodeled it to open up that club where they wouldn't let you in if you weren't pretty enough, you know? But
yeah, was that the one down on 5th?
It was on 5th.
It was on 5th or south of 5th?
I think it was on 5th. And he gutted it to remodel it, and he gutted it intentionally to the fact that he made it look like, oops, sorry, and then zoning came in and said they had to tear it down because he screwed it up, and that was his plan to begin with, you know?
Yeah.
So he could tear it down so he could put in some ugly-ass resort. And that, when I saw that happening, that's when I split and moved back to Nashville. You know, my mom was not doing well in her health and all. But then after mom passed and I was kind of telling her, I saw the same thing happening there. Everybody from L.A., so many people from California were moving to Nashville, which was fine. But then, because Nashville was so tiny to begin with, and all the, you know, they started throwing up these, where the horse farms were and the area where I lived and all that. These McMansion subdivisions and, you know, and this and that and the other thing. And then I split and came out here. I haven't been back to Nashville since the flood, which was almost 14 years ago when I lost my home.
Was it 14 years ago? Wow.
14 years ago. And I don't ever want to go back because my heart won't be able to take it, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm sure at some point I'll have to go back, but to for whatever reason, but I have no plans. And that's the thing, that whole reference there is the same thing as South Beach, because when I left, within just a few years, so many of our friends were saying, it'll break your heart if you come back. It'll rip your heart out. Because we had so much fun, and it was so cool that you just want to keep those memories in your mind, you know?
Yeah. Well, I remember, because remember when we moved out here in 98, we stopped in Nashville and stayed with you.
Right.
And we went to that one area downtown where it just kind of still felt very small town Nashville. We were right across the street from the Grand Ole Opry. We were walking down the street. Everybody, there was just enough bars and restaurants that everybody still knew each other. But
exactly.
You had variety, but everybody kind of knew each other.
Lower Broadway. And now Lower Broadway is all like Kid Rock Steakhouse and, you know, Jerk Me Off. Oh, sorry. You know, this and that. Like Robert's Restaurant, Western Ware is still there. Tootsie's is still there. But like, you know, it's Ernest Tubb Record Shop's been there since like 1920, right? Ernest Tubb was a very famous country music guy. That's now gone. But it's the friggin' bachelorette party capital of the world. And you cannot move on Lower Broadway for all the people. And they have these glass penis-shaped hot tubs cruising up. And it's just so tacky. And everybody, you know, in my opinion, and people, most of the people that I know from Nashville are like, it's just like Austin, Seattle, Portland. They're like, please stop coming here. But everybody that goes there is like, oh my God, it's the most. And if I have to hear one more friggin' person in Beverly Hills, because go, oh my God, we just got back from Nashville. It is so cool. I want to move there. I mean, every day I hear somebody, and it's just, it's overkill. But yeah, same thing with South Beach. But you know, so.
Did they preserve some of the really cool old signage? So on Lower Broadway, some of those places that were there in the 90s, you know, they had been there. But when I came through in the 90s, they had some of the coolest signage. Like, yeah. You know, the old style with the big light bulbs and an arrow. And
exactly. And the neon and things like that. I honestly don't know if they have or not. I know the one I remember was Jones Pet Shop in Hillsboro Village, which is now some sort of, it was a pet shop with that awesome neon. I know they kept that at least the last time I was there. But you know what really is, you know, if you go down to the end of Lower Broadway where you hit the river and you turn left up 2nd Avenue, that's where that guy detonated the bomb on Christmas morning a couple years back. You remember that, don't you?
Yeah.
Because that was heartbreaking because that, all those warehouses, you know, from the 1800s, aesthetically, it was beautiful. And like when I was growing up, they were all full of flea markets and like my friend Basha they built an apartment. It was like on stilts inside one of those warehouses. And she had the whole warehouse as her studio. But you literally went up these stairs into like, you know, like the house of the future at Disneyland used to be kind of thing. Well, that guy on Christmas morning, you know, he detonated that bomb from his camper. And it was not terror. He was just crazy. And he at least went around warning. Fortunately, most people weren't even home because it was Christmas morning. A lot of people were traveling.
I remember that.
Let me tell you what happened. That was weird, too, because I had my Christmas Eve party, and, of course, it was a huge success, and I was hungover as hell. And it was about 5 or 6 here. And I sat down, and I picked up my phone, and I clicked on Facebook for whatever reason. And just as I did, my friend Michael DeGregory, Michael and Colleen, you remember Colleen? You'd know him if you saw him. Colleen was the fashion designer. She and Michael have been married for like 30 years now, but he was a chef on the beach. But they live in Nashville. They have a studio in Printer's Alley, which is right downtown. And right when I clicked on, he was doing a live feed, and nobody knew what had happened. They thought a plane had crashed because the boom was so loud. He ran outside, and you could see fire and everything like that. It was terrifying. And so I saw him going, he's breathing heavy. He's like, nobody knows what's going on. The police aren't even here yet, blah, blah, blah. So I immediately called him. And I go, Michael, he goes, we don't know. We think it's a plane, you know? So it was really creepy to see that. But that guy, he destroyed, I mean, they had to level a lot of those beautiful buildings. So.
That's a shame.
You know, I don't know. It was the most wonderful place that we were damn Yankees because we came and stayed, you know? But. I miss it. So I miss my friends. And
when you come from a town with a street called Printer's Alley, that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. You know,
well, Printer's Alley was where I passed out at the Brass Rail restaurant, my senior prom dinner in Printer's Alley. Printer's Alley was an alley that used to be, I guess, all the strip clubs and honky tonks and all.
Well, why did it get called Printer's then?
I
just assumed it was like back in the day, like in the 1800s, that's where like the newspaper ran out.
Well, that could very well be. I don't know.
And then maybe it evolved into.
Yeah, it was all like, like I'm sure its heyday was the 40s, 50s and 60s and into the early 70s. Yeah. But who knows? It's made a comeback. You know, I have friends that have properties there and they leave on the weekend. They live in condos and stuff, but they leave on Friday and go out to their parents' house in the suburbs and shit like that because they don't want to be around all these people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's that. That's Nashville now. That's why we're talking about moving to Thailand. You guys giving that any more possible kicking around?
Yeah, well, it's between Thailand and Indonesia, Bali.
Well, see, I was talking to my brother Greg. You know my brother Greg, and I thought he's a successful, very, very intelligent international businessman. He spends a lot of time in Asia. And I thought he would be the first one to go, I don't understand why we're even considering that. And he was like, it's really not a bad idea. And he goes, don't just single out Pattaya or Pattaya, however you say it. He goes, you should look into Cambodia and Vietnam because I just want to go to some little coastal place. I want to wear my damn Speedo and have my Asian wicker, young hat, you know, and, my metal detector. I know that's racist, but I don't care. And, and just walk up and down the beach all day searching for buried treasure, you know?
Well, you should look in the Bali, Indonesia as well, then.
Okay, well, let's look at something together. You know,
and what's great about Bali is you can go up to Bangkok if you want big city, and you can go down to Australia.
Yeah, the location is so easy to get to other places for a couple in a couple hours.
Yeah.
Like Michael, hold on. By the way, 323-203-0815 if you want to call in and put your 2 cents in. You're welcome to call the Bob Dean Show. Yay. But my friend Michael, who moved over to Thailand, you know, he's our correspondent from over there, Michael Sandoval, the white Mexican. He calls himself on stage. But he just loves it. Loves it. And
wait, loves
a couple
what?
Of shows. Pattaya.
Oh, okay. So he does.
He's an LA native. He sold his house over here and all that sort of thing. But he lives like on the 30th floor of a brand new, gorgeous high rise, like in Century, the equivalent of Century City. And he's paying $267 a month. I'm getting ready to sneeze.
Yeah, exactly.
Pardon me.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, your cost of living. I mean, you could. I mean, you can go really high end over there, but you can also get away with $15,000, $20,000 a year living expenses.
Well, exactly. The bot is you know, and I met this young woman at where I work now at the Mosaic Hotel in Beverly Hills. Come see me, everybody. I really love that job. It's it's pretty awesome. I don't have the same people sitting at the bar going, honey, 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 just give me a splash, which is code for can I have some free wine. But the point is that there's a lovely girl there named Sonia, and her family goes back pre-Ming Dynasty in Pattaya. And she was like, and she lives here. She's a young DJ and artist and that sort of thing. And she was raised in Minnesota, but her father came over, you know, as a young man. Mm-hmm. But the rest of her family's there, and she was like, she's like, oh, my uncle, he's a pretty important person, knows a lot of people and this and that. And hopefully I'm going to get him to come on and talk to us one day. But she's like, oh, I'll set you up, meaning that at least I'll have an in with, you know, if I want to work. Because I love L.A. I do. But it's just so expensive, you know, you know, you're the one that lured me out here. Is that Dickie's tiptoeing through the back room?
Yeah, she went to go answer the door. Amazon's here.
They're probably there five times a day if they're anywhere like around this neighborhood. But what was I just saying? Is that I love LA. I know you love it. You're the one that drug my ass out here. You and Dickie moved out here as a swinging couple in a little chaotic convertible. And then you're like, hey, come out. We'll write. We'll do projects. And two weeks later, you pack it up and go back to Lauderdale.
Yeah, it worked. I got you out of my time zone, so I went.
Bastard. You also got Mary out here, too. How's Mary?
But wait, but what else did I tell you you should do?
Radio, voiceover.
Exactly.
Yes.
So the Bob Dean Show brought to you by me.
By Clark Trainer. And yay.
Well, my hands are in the Matrix again.
I am. But yeah, thanks for that. But I'm glad that I came out here. I do love it out here. It's just, you know, the cost. And you don't have any homeless people out in Agoura, do you?
No, not
because
really.
Because the reason. What surprised me is that I had to, we had to go out to the Woodland Hills area for a doctor's appointment for dentist. And they're lovely suburbs from the 50s and 60s, right? Mm-hmm. We get off, I can't remember what, but it was going up the 405. We got off at one of the exits, and it was the same as it is here under the freeway bridges. Tons of unfortunate people, piles of garbage, and then you go a half a block and you're in an area that's just pristine. So that's another thing too. It's getting kind of, you know, I love my neighborhood, you know, where I live. I'm in the same rent controlled place. In my rent controlled place, everybody, the grand piano's new. I love it. But they'll have to blast me out of here. And it's still a great area. It's gentrifying. They're tearing down the old houses, but around the, like up closer to Olympic, it's pretty rough with the,
I can imagine. Yeah.
Well, I really think you have plenty of room out there. You need to put up a little guest house and let me come out there. There is room between the patio, between the pool and your property line up there. You could put in a gorgeous one of those little tiny houses. and let me live there.
Well, you know, it's funny because we were looking at old Airstreams. We would love to find a way to get an old Airstream and put it at the back of the property behind the vineyard.
That's a brilliant idea. That's what Michael and Colleen were going to do as a guest house to their place in Nashville.
Right.
Because they had,
right.
they had a big lot like yours. And, of course, it's since been torn down and condos put up. But, ladies and gentlemen, Clark and Nikki have just a beautiful home in Agora Hills. It's maybe an eighth of a mile from the high school there.
Well, thank you. Yeah, about.
And you back up to the chaparral on the hillside.
Yeah.
I like it because your neighbor's pool, because you got a huge lot, and your neighbor's pool is kind of neat because I like how yours is right off the patio, but then you have that inclining, like, garden area. It's really awesome. You guys really lucked out with that place, and I know you're very happy there.
Yeah.
But you don't invite enough friends to come out and use the pool. You don't invite enough friends from Santa Monica to come out and use the pool.
It was a lost summer. We started a 3-week pool renovation that just finished after 3 months. So it just finished yesterday.
Yeah, you were telling me about that. What all did they do?
I don't understand how general contractors get away with it. Do you know anyone in your life who initiated a construction project that finished on time and on budget?
Never.
Never. So how do they get away with this crap? How do GCs and how does that entire industry get away with this? It's shocking to me that, you know, never on time, never under budget, never.
Always well, counselor, tell us how that works. Am I being billed on a letterhead right now?
Well, you're about to.
But yes, yeah, so
and
finally,
start the clock.
Did you reshape it, or because I know that you fixed yourself years ago?
Yeah, no, reshaping it. That would be we added in a Baja shelf, but it's a freeform pool. The walls, the gunite is where it is because that would be a massive. That'd be a new pool, and so we did add in a Baja shelf for you to hang out in. With you can sit on the lounge chair. With 1 foot in the water, cigarettes, Grand Marnier.
Well, I was thinking you probably didn't invite me out because the last kick-ass party that you guys had when we walked around to the smoking area and I had only had like a drink and a half, but I slipped on the thing and fell into the chair. Remember?
I
kept off of the downstairs bathroom changing hut there.
Yes, right.
I was like, oh my. But then, of course, I get in the pool, and of course, ladies and gentlemen who haven't seen me without a shirt on, I'm large and extremely hairy. And I'll never forget, I think it was Yandan was in the pool with his buddies, and they all were just like, literally, their jaws were like this because they had never seen a guy with so much hair. And I was like, captivating, ain't it? And then when we stopped in during COVID, and we were talking outside in the yard when Dennis and I were going to Lodi or wherever it was. I go, hey, you're the kid that was standing. He goes, hey, how are you? Because they call me Uncle Bob. And I go, yeah, you're the kid that was staring at my back hair. And he's like, ugh. I go, it's okay. You can't help yourself.
Well, I mean, we love you to death, but he finally had photographic proof that Sasquatch is real.
Hey, listen, man. Whatever if I can make a nickel off a picture of me with body hair, I'll walk through the woods naked. I don't care. So,
the power of orange. Can I just say the power of orange?
I'm flattered you remember that. If I never, because I, you know, my manager sends me out. As a matter of fact, I have on an audition today for an LGBTQ couple. And what I'm getting are those damn, you know, the fat people dancing around on the Jardiance commercials, you know, those really high budget Jardiance. I've auditioned for that 3 times, 3 different ones, and haven't gotten it. I'm like, because I've lost like 20 pounds. I'm like, maybe that's it. She sends me out a lot, but I haven't booked anything. I feel bad. Christina Scott, CA Talent. She's the best. I love you, Christina. And her ex-husband was a bass player in Kiss. But at any rate, where was I going with this? The Power of Orange commercial if I never do anything else, I did that. Seriously. Is that not the wildest, coolest
best, funniest commercial I've ever seen in my life? It's such a great nuanced, understated humor, which is what makes it so great.
The commercial won all kinds of awards for production and direction and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, it was well shot.
And there's gorgeous.
Was it the Standard Hotel on?
No, it was the Stallhouse. The Stallhouse that Buck Stahl, the football player, built in the late 50s.
Oh.
And it's a small house, but it's all glass. And it was known because you could step to the end of the living room and look right down into the canyon.
Yeah, that's a legendary L.A. piece of architecture. You know,
it was so funny because I had read, back when people read newspapers, and I still do, even at $2.25 for a daily paper or whatever it is now.
Wow.
I had read this fascinating article in the Sunday Supplement about the Stallhouse and how Buck Stahl was a football player and he had a Cadillac convertible. And every Sunday he'd put big boulders in and drive up into – that was when the Hollywood Hills were developing. And he built the house himself. And I was just – I'd always wanted to see it. Because, you know, when you go up into the hills, I mean, you can see them as you're driving from the backside. But when you're going down the streets where they are, all you see is like little wooden fronts and garage doors and all.
Yeah.
The point is when we that morning of the shoot, we all met down on Sunset Boulevard and to park, and they shuttled us up in vans. And when we came through the gate and I saw the pool and the house, I mean, my jaw just dropped. And I was like, this is a Stallhouse of all those 6 degrees of separation things. And I was just so proud to be a part of it until my junk fell out at the end of the commercial. I told you about that part, didn't I?
I didn't know your junk came out.
Well, at the end of the commercial, when I snapped the rear end of my suit, my little flabby cheeks hang out, the costume mistress had made a garment, an undergarment of pantyhose, and I was supposed to, that shot was supposed to be my thumbs pulling the Speedo down and me bending over and diving into the pool with the illusion of being naked. And when it came to that point, there was a wardrobe failure, like when Janet Jackson's boob popped out. Picture that. Except it was my manhood, and it all went whoosh out on the left side. And, of course, I just bent over with both my hands in front, and I'm laughing, and all the girls in the chase lounges are laughing, and the production crew is laughing. And the woman from the company, Factory Design Labs, who was behind the green screen, so you couldn't see her, but you could hear her on the mic, she goes, let's just cut that part out. And I literally had to, like, crab walk all the way across the pool to get to a point where I could push my stuff back in. But that's pretty funny.
You probably shouldn't mention your junk and crabs in the same sentence.
Right. Well, that was back when I knew you, when we were kids. But it was funny, too, because that lady came up to me from the company, and she said to me, and I'll never forget, she goes, how would you like to be the ad representative for Factory Design Labs? And I was like, what? Meaning a campaign like Flow, you know, and Can You Hear Me Now and all. Well, I would have been set for life. And she goes, we're thinking about it. But it was a no-go. So wouldn't that have been special? I could actually be living in a house like this. Just showing off my butt. Showing off my butt. We have to be prepared. We have about 7 more minutes, I think, because we have to. Because normally I keep yapping and I go over. So Sam's going to give us, a show. Yeah, thank you. So at any rate, what else is going on? Oh, yeah. Oh, no. Go back to the trip when you went. Tell us more about the trip. For those of you that are just 1 minute left, got to wrap it up. Clark, will you come back? Yeah, I know. Time flies when you're having fun, right? I always think it's 5 minutes still, but it's 10 minutes still when the show, our airtime is done. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning into the Bob Dean Show. Thank you, Clark Trainer, my brother, and love to the family. Give Dickie a big smooch. And next time, we're going to talk more about your trip and Tenzing Norgay. Okay? Thank you all for tuning in. Catch us next week, 12 o'clock. Love you all, and have a great day. And invite me over to that damn pool soon. Now it's fixed.
Okay, it's going to happen next few weeks.
Bye guys. Bye. Thank you.
You're listening. listening to The Bob Dean Show, only on LA Talk Radio.